Hey guys, welcome back to The Writer's Lens. This is Josh, JCL Felto, and today I'll be continuing in this series I've been doing on my initial publications and what it took to get published, and then ultimately figuring out what my passion was after I got published, and now getting into sort of the nitty-gritty of what it was like working towards publishing that first novel. And if you've been following along in the last few episodes, it's been a little bit of, well, you know, how did you get there? How did you manage a lot of the strange curves and tough times, not always getting everything done that I wanted to get done, but mostly working towards that end goal, which was to eventually write a full-scale book. And by no means do I claim absolute authority on how to write a novel. By no means would I say that I'm at that place yet, but as far as knowing what the persistence looks like and what it takes to get it through to completion, that's something that I really want to talk about today, because we've all heard the phrase, you have to work really hard at something, or you just kind of work really hard, or you're not working hard enough. And to a lot of people, that can mean a lot of different things. And in terms of how a writer may interpret that, it can be, you know, a whole gamut of different things on the spectrum in terms of how well do I work, how much do I work, and how efficiently do I work in what I'm doing. So keeping all those things in mind, how do you go about doing that? In my case, obviously, as a writer, my pursuits have been, at least in this particular form, is, you know, finishing the next book. And when I wrote my first book, which took about a half year to do, the idea of working really hard for me was just basically making enough time on the weekends or sometimes on the weeknights to kind of get my thoughts together after a day's work from the, you know, 8 to 5, 9 to 5, whatever that may be. I had the advantage of having my evenings where I could decompress and start to do some other things. But the problem was is that a lot of what I used to do anyway was always in front of a computer. So if I was in front of a computer for 8-9 hours throughout the day, it just made it very difficult to come home and want to do that again. So I relegated a lot of my time to the weekends, Saturdays, you know, Sunday nights, right before the work week started. That was when my time would come to sit down and really go, okay, this is when I'm going to work on my writing. This is when I'm going to work on my book. And the things that I found, even after writing the first book and then doing the second book and then, you know, carrying it on over now to this latest book that I wrote, The Road to Mars, I had to get myself to this next level of learning how to write and doing it more efficiently and doing it better. Because the thing that I found most of all in the last book that I wrote, which was a full-scale science fiction post-apocalyptic book, 374 pages, was that the key to writing better had to be my number one priority. You know, and again, getting back to this concept of working really hard, I had to figure out what was the balance of just totally taking 6 to 7 hours on a Saturday to just cram through stuff and try to get it done as quickly as possible. Or do I take it in stride? You know, do I, you know, take like a half hour here, 45 minutes there? I honestly, when I first started, I had no idea what the proper balance would be. But since, again, and some of the advantages of being single at the time, I was able to figure those things out. Now I can't speak to that as much being married with kids. So even now, time management becomes even more important. But anyway, back to first figuring it out. But I remember when I did my first book and someone had asked me about what it was like. I said, I just worked at it, and they wanted to know, well, did you work really hard to hone your craft? And it kind of got me thinking to, when was it that I first heard the phrase, you know, work really hard to, you know, hone your craft, and what did that look like? And I think the first time I actually heard it was when I was a little league baseball player, and I used to have this terrible hitch in my elbow where whenever a pitch would come in, I'd automatically just drop my elbow, drop my shoulder, and I'd try to hit a home run, even though I was probably 60 pounds soaking wet out there as a 9-year-old or 10-year-old trying to hit home runs. And I could hit pretty well. I could hit pretty decently. But it was so frustrating because I did it almost all the time. And I remember my coach pulling me aside when I was, again, you know, 8 or 9 or whatever it was. And he just said, "Josh, this is what you need to do." And he put my elbow up, made me hold my bat higher. And then he said, "I'm going to throw you a pitch. You hit it." So I did. And I hit it straight. You know, I didn't pop it up in the air. I didn't do anything like that. And he did it, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 times over. And the funny thing was is that next practice I come back and I went right back to dropping my elbow, dropping my shoulder, the whole 9 yards. Everything that I was doing wrong, I was right back to doing it. And again, my coach pulled me aside and he said, "All right, Josh, elbow up, shoulder up, here we go." And I did it a couple times. And he just said to me, "You know, you're really going to have to keep working hard at that in order for you to get it right." And that's what I think the first time I actually heard that particular phrase, you know, working really hard. And to me, working really hard meant, well, I just have to do things in repetition. You know, I should be able to do things in repetition, but doing it the right way and having somebody over my shoulder to tell me that, hey, you're doing it right. You're actually doing this correctly. From a writing standpoint, this can be a little bit difficult because there's a ton of different people out there who might say, well, you should do this or you should do that. And I asked a few folks around in the Midwest area as far as, you know, what should I do as a writer that who are also writers, who are also penning their own novels and penning their own stories. And I happen to be very fortunate in that I do have a small little consortium of fellow writers and authors and folks of like that that are in Cleveland that are able to share their experiences with me. So a couple of their suggestions that I found was to keep a daily journal. They want you to keep a daily journal. Study the authors I admired the most and try to emulate their work, their style. Read as much as I can, and when that also kind of goes with the first one. And then reading books that talk about grammar, which of course sounds really exciting, that really talk about form and structure and do's and don'ts of reading and writing. So again, keeping a daily journal, studying authors I admire, reading as much as I can of them, and then reading books about actual grammar. Now, if you're not a writer, if you're not someone that's really into writing, this sounds probably like a pretty boring list to you. Or if you're not into reading, you're like, "Oh my gosh, this is just terrible." But as far as having a foolproof plan for getting better at writing, this is what I had to do. I knew that since this was something that I cared about, I had to try to implement some of these things that folks who had been there before me knew that this was the right way to go about doing things. So I started doing that. Honestly, after I wrote my second book and I had kind of taken that time away from it, I said, these are the things I need to do. I need to actually start doing these things so that I can get better at it and actually prepare myself for writing the real deal. So I started reading a lot. And I was reading a lot of science fiction. I was reading a lot by Frank Herbert, who's the author of the Dune series, first really got me into science fiction. A little bit of Orson Scott Card. He's the author of the Ender's Game series, among others. And a little bit of C.S. Lewis, who I'm sure if you're listening to this and you have read books before, then you know who C.S. Lewis is. And even more recently, for those out there that are interested in sci-fi or, you know, sort of modern tales of science fiction, Pierce Brown is a science fiction writer that wrote this series called Red Rising that I thought was pretty good. It was probably more of a young adult science fiction, but really, really enjoyed it. So I've been reading all these and digesting them, taking them in, breathing them out, if you will. And then I also got to reading books that dived a little bit deeper into understanding structure. And there was a book that, again, my consortium of writers that I belong to here in the Midwest, we all cited on this book called The Book of Writing, which was by an individual by the name of Paul the Roque, which basically talks about here are some do's, here are some don'ts that you want to do with your writing. And for me, it was really the first time, I think, since high school that I had actually sat down and gone, hey, how do I write better? And this was probably the one area that was a little bit harder to track with because it's easier to sit down and be entertained by, you know, tales of far-off space travel and things like that. But ironically, the thing that I actually struggled with the most was just keeping a daily journal. I couldn't do that. I couldn't actually keep a journal very well for the life of me. I'd get up, try to think about doing it, and just said, no, I'm just not going to do it. But all things considered, though, 3 out of the 4 I was doing pretty well. And it honestly made a huge shift in the way that I was viewing my writing. It got me out of having a mentality of sort of all or nothing about what I was doing, which I think is a very popular sentiment among the creative community, is that you feel like you're either in it, you know, 110% or you're not. And if you're only in it up to the knees or possibly waist deep in whatever it is that you're trying to do, you're never going to actually get there. And it's a very interesting sentiment because I feel like it's very prevalent, especially in Western culture, that you have to throw away everything and go after your dream or your passion, which in many cases is kind of a fool's way of just sort of saying, I don't want any responsibility. Case in point, Jeff Goins, who's the author of You Are a Writer and The Art of Work, recently published a book called Real Artists Don't Starve, which to me is quite fascinating. It's a comprehensive guide on how and why creatives should not seek out poverty as a means to feed their passions. In fact, he goes on to kind of dispel this whole myth that every creative person, every author, every filmmaker has to somehow, in essence, starve themselves in order to, quote-unquote, make it someday, which something that he concludes, obviously, is a false narrative. But we believe it. Why? Because of so many rags-to-riches stories. In Western culture, we tend to think of that the people that really make it are the ones who have somehow gone through some enormously difficult experience and have come out shining on the other side, and this is what we have to aspire to. I think of a lot of athletes in this way, too. You think about guys like, and I'm in the Midwest, so this is probably an example that goes without saying, but an individual such as LeBron James, a guy that grew up in a, I wouldn't say tumultuous environment, but he had no dad around or anything like that, and it's usually one way against you. But the fact that he went from sort of living in the inner city at Akron, ends up becoming a multimillionaire athlete now, these are the kinds of stories that a lot of people in our, you know, in our society, our culture, cling to, and we say, "Man, like if that could be us, you know?" Because I'm kind of not from anything either. I want to be from something, but I'm not really sure, you know, how to get there or what it is. So we cling to these passions, we cling to these things that we think will get us there, in essence. And Jeff does a great job of really kind of turning this on its head and basically saying how, you know, it's not a really good idea to try and live through this whole narrative of I have to be somebody that is struggling, I have to show people that I'm trying really hard, and I've forsaken everything else just so that I can go after my passion. Well, that's not technically working really hard, and in fact, it's very difficult, if anything, to recover from financial obscurity once you've dug yourself this incredibly deep hole of financial insecurity, which was something that I found out pretty quickly as well myself. I mean, I, as many of you may know from earlier podcasts and earlier episodes, I actually did, I was doing health insurance while I was writing my first two books, and high-paying job, you know, well-paying job, and, you know, there was no reason for me to jump ship and get out of the industry necessarily because there was good money in it, but again, as I had said before, it didn't feel like something that I wanted to do with my life. But even more so, I felt like it was distracting from the thing that I wanted to do. And that was the way, as I was saying, my mentality had to shift. I had to change my mentality from, I can't just be discontented for 8 to 10 hours of the day and then feel like all of my contentment was going to happen later in the day. That's not actually working efficiently. That's not working hard even. That's just working stupidly. It's working inefficiently. Because if you create this dichotomy in your mind of, well, you know what, the job that's actually paying my bills, I may not like, but why would I make it worse for myself by having the attitude of, I only want my escape. I only want to get to my escape in the evening. That's what I want to do. And this was obviously very faulty thinking. And it didn't really occur to me, though, until I had stepped away from health insurance and I was literally working for a brand new industry. I was working as a contractor. And again, I was making really good money, but I could set my hours. And that gave me a ton of freedom. It gave me more freedom to write. I thought, hey, this is a great new venture for me personally. I'm going to have time to write this novel I've been wanting to write for a long time. I'm not going to have to worry about sitting in front of a desk for 8 hours a day and feeling exhausted. This is exactly what I want to do. Well, I didn't have enough time as I thought I would. So I was like, man, I have to cut myself more time. I have to get out of this even more so. I have to figure out how to cut my hours from my day job so that I can have more time for my night job. So I took a part-time job right after I was done doing the contracting work, which was, you know, 40, 45 hours a week. So now I'm only working about 20 hours a week. I'm working part-time for a nonprofit, and I literally am only working 3 days out of the five. Out of a regular work week, Monday through Friday, I'm working 3 days out of the five. So I have these other 2 days to do whatever. And in fact, it actually kind of got down to 2.5 days. And I found out that just because I had extra days now to focus in on my passion didn't necessarily mean I was going to work more efficiently. This was a huge, huge wake-up call, again, on this road to being published. I found out that just because I had free time didn't mean that I was going to use it effectively. In fact, if anything, I was more effective when I was working 5 days a week, 8 to 5, and basically blocking off time in my evenings and on the weekends because I was more structured. Now I had 3 days out of the week that I was working, and I had these other two where I went, hey, I can do just about whatever I want with them. In fact, if anything, I might just stop what I'm doing with them. So there I was, having this extra time, and I wasn't working any better than what I was before. If anything, I felt lazier because now I could wake up whenever I wanted on Monday. I could wake up whenever I wanted on Friday. And I had all this time to do stuff. I had all this time to really dig in and read and do more of what I was saying earlier, which was, you know, possibly keeping a journal, reading more of my favorite authors. None of that was working for me. None of that was. In fact, if anything, I was growing even more dissatisfied with my part-time job because I felt like this also, because it's part-time, isn't paying the bills like it used to. I'm not being able to pay my own bills necessarily, and I was getting married at this time too, so this is a lot of stuff going on at once. But the craziest thing is I slowly started to realize how much it meant to have a good structure around my own self so that I could actually make the time around what I was doing to pay the bills and to keep myself out of a financial hole. And I was digging myself into one very slowly by having this part-time job. I was literally doing that. Well, it continued on, and eventually I left this part-time job and took another part-time job after that. And this one paid even less. So now I was really hitting rock bottom with financial insecurity. And again, it was all very humbling, and I look back on it, and I remember thinking to myself, back when I had this healthcare insurance job, I just went, man, if I just had more time to write, I'd be so much better off. And then when I got the time off, I went, man, if only I had, you know, more money to help pay for my bills so I wouldn't have to worry about my financial problems so I could get back to writing, I wouldn't have any of these issues. But that was basically the path that I went down, is I didn't know that was keeping me afloat, and that was keeping me in the best case scenario for myself to actually go for it. Because this whole time I was thinking to myself, oh man, I should just quit my job tomorrow. I have a lot of savings saved up. I should just go for it. I should just put things aside for like 3 months, see what I can do, then I'll return to the workforce. Totally bogus idea. Terrible idea to do that. Granted, I didn't do that, but it was more of a slow, steady decline as in terms of what I was doing. So I figured that I needed to get back into financial shape. I had to get a job again that was going to get me, you know, like an 8 to 5, or was going to get me back into good shape again financially, so I didn't have to worry about this. So then I could actually plug that time back in when I had spare time, so I didn't have anything else lingering over me. And I hope you're tracking with all this, because regardless if you're a writer, regardless if you're someone that, if you're not an aspiring writer, even if you're an aspiring business person, or if you're someone that is trying to set a goal down the road, imagine how you use your time. Do you use your time wisely? And for me, I honestly just didn't have that skill set yet unless I had structure around me. When I didn't have structure, I floundered a bit. I was either distracted, or I felt like I wasn't doing enough. I felt like a failure. I felt like I couldn't ever get to the point I wanted to be because it just was going to be so out of reach because I didn't have the discipline. I felt like I had discipline, but I really didn't. I honestly didn't have it. So where was all the turning point in this? Well, for one, I stopped working part-time and I got a full-time job. So I was back to working Monday through Friday and I was back to finding time in the evenings and on the weekends to do my writing again, which again, now getting back out of the financial hole without giving away too many details there. And this had a huge effect on me, not just from a self-esteem standpoint, but just in terms of coming full circle and seeing that Jeff Goins was right. You know, you're, as a real artist, don't starve yourself. You know, don't put yourself in these situations where you're going, man, you know, if I was only living out of a dumpster, you know, and someone were to find me on the side of the street writing on napkins or something, or hear my voice or whatever it is, that kind of stuff really just doesn't happen. I can tell you that right now, it just doesn't happen. What does happen, though, is that if you're someone that can take responsibility for what you're doing, if you can recognize that you have a larger goal, even though you're doing something smaller right in the interim, you can still make some things happen. And that's what I had to realize, is that I had to come full circle on everything and see that it wasn't about me going all in and working really hard while I was all in. It actually was about drawing back and recognizing that, hey, these are the things about myself that I need to keep in check. And one of those is obviously paying my bills. Paying my bills, keeping myself out of financial obscurity. It's just, it's a reality. What are the two things they say you'll do in life? Pay taxes and die? Yes. Pay your taxes, pay your loans, pay your bills. You know, those are all the things you should be doing anyway. So I started looking into this, how this, you know, this whole, you know, artist starving thing kind of got started, or rather. But again, I kind of go back to Jerry Jenkins because I've listened to a lot of his stuff now and read a lot of his stuff. And again, he's the author of the Left Behind series, and he has his own writing guild that he does where he helps aspiring writers. And Jerry actually shared in one of his interviews that he found out that he was only going to write when his kids went to bed or they were asleep or the rest of his family was asleep. And I thought that was some really good advice. Figure out when is the most effective time for you to be effective. For me, the most effective time for me was not to have my entire Monday open and not know what the heck I was going to do with it. Instead, it was, okay, I know that I'm going to be working Monday through Friday or whatever days I am working. Okay, everyone's different. But then figuring out the time and the priorities of what you need to do after that. Now, granted, I'm married and I have two kids now, so those come first before my writing, absolutely. Even when I do these podcasts, I do them when my kids go to bed. I'm not going to be doing these during the day. So figuring out that balance is so, so crucial, because that is actually the nuts and bolts of working really hard, is understanding how you're going to work efficiently. And when I did that, when I figured out that I needed to obviously get myself out of financial obscurity, I had to get myself back on a more of a structured schedule, then I could put my mind back on a structured schedule and actually finish that book, which is exactly what I did. In November of 2015, I finished The Road to Mars, and I put it out there, but didn't announce it until the springtime. But I had actually finished this thing almost 2 years ago now, which is hard to believe. But that was the big wake-up call and huge learning curve for me. I mean, I'm summing all this up in about 20 minutes or less, but it was such a learning curve. And, you know, granted, you look back on it and you go, man, did I have to go through that? Yes, I did. You know, I had to go through that in order to understand that, you know, A, I had limitations, and B, I had sort of false expectations about what it meant to work hard and really go after your passion and really go after what it was that I wanted to accomplish. So all those things being said, even though I've done all those things and I've begun to establish, you know, the good habits versus the bad habits, the one thing that you still will deal with as a writer is rejection. And even though I'd finished my first big novel, you know, I felt like I had a lot of gusto. I was heading off to some book signings. I was off to do some book conferences. You're still going to run into barriers, okay? Just because you finish the book doesn't mean that it's over. And that's the thing that I want to cover in the next episode. So a little bit of a preview for next episode will be talking about the rejection process and what that has looked like since writing my latest book, and how that has kind of played into basically teaching me more about persistence, but also just about understanding that no doesn't mean no forever. It could mean just not yet. That's what I'll be tackling in my next episode. So again, guys, I really appreciate you checking in on my podcast, The Writer's Lens. I always look forward to putting these out there every week, having a lot of fun doing it. So I hope you're having a lot of fun and learning a lot too, just about the writing process in general. So looking forward to next week. Again, if you guys want to check out more, you can check out my website, which is jclfalto.com. That's jclfalto.com. Again, have a great week. I'll catch up with you guys soon. Later.